I want to talk to you about which stocks you play to take advantage of AI. So you've spoken about Coffle.
Yeah.
I did do my research. Sanmina, we're going to chat about a little later in the conversation. But other companies that we can play to take advantage of the AI trends that you've spoken about, extricating efficiencies, and really operating processes starting to be automated. What else other than Coffle?
Well, and banks. I mean, I've mentioned banks, and you know, banks, it's cutting costs, it's growing revenue. The best way, there's a company called, they wrote a book called Capital Account, and it was Marathon way back when, and their whole investments are going to turn around here. Their whole investment philosophy is to focus on capital flows. So avoid going where too much capital has flowed. And I mean, to Si's point with Tesla, you know, why is Tesla down? Well, because the competition's enormous. And why is the competition enormous? Because everybody was opening up EV cars. I mean, cars you never even heard of, the Neo and the Fisker and all the rest, the competition. And then you had all the big guys, the Porsches and the BMWs and all those guys. They all invested capital. And what happens when people invest capital? You overwhelm supply. And what does that do to prices? It pushes prices down. Okay. So go where people are, where capital is fleeing. Don't go where capital is gone.
Well, it's another play on herd mentality.
Correct.
You know, don't become part of the herd.
Who's opening banks? I mean, we can't open a bank tomorrow. We could open a food delivery business tomorrow. Actually, we could open a perfume business tomorrow. We need a fancy bottle. You need, you know, a good looking TikTok influencer, some aqueous cream and some scent, and you're in the game. You know, so, but we're not in the game for banks, and regulation has made it difficult. And so actually, I think banks are an interesting place to be. And they,
and it's a big term, banks. Can you be a bit more specific?
Well, we own European banks. So we don't own US banks because, you know, one of the things as a value investor, you want to be careful of value traps. And how do you avoid value traps? Try and stay away from disasters. And I think the commercial real estate in the US is probably a pending disaster. And I don't want exposure to that. And so we think European banks are great because they've been under the cosh. The European regulator has been tough on them. They haven't been able to buy back stock. You had the pandemic. It was, can't buy back stock, can't pay dividends, etc. Keep things. Let's see how things are. No one was opening European banks. Well, capital has got, there's been less capital flowing into European banks than has been flying into EVs. So
your top two European banks.
So we've got ABN AMRO and, conservative Dutch retail bank. And that's selling on an 8% dividend yield, 5x earnings, half book value. And that's pretty appealing. Now, are the returns on equity amazing? But they're good. I'm buying this thing at half book value and I'm getting an 8% dividend yield. I don't need much more than that. So, we've got Barclays. We've had Japanese banks. But now what's happened is with Japan, everybody was keen on Japan. And so what did people do? They invested in Japanese ETFs. Okay. And what are ETFs? They are, they're mostly market cap weighted. So what were you buying if you bought a Japanese ETF? You bought Toyota, Honda, Mitsubishi UFJ, Sumitomo, Mitsui. So those big companies. So what's happened to those? Well, now you've got Toyota on 1.6x book.
And this is interesting because this was a theme that we started with Magnus yesterday, was Japan. He looked at you in the audience and said, Sean's going to talk a bit more about that tomorrow. Are you saying now that you are getting out of Japan because the herd is following?
Well, we have been lightening our Japanese equities, okay, because certain companies got to our target prices. But where we haven't is in the smaller and mid companies. So the money's flowed into the big passives, and the big passives only invest in the big caps. So the big caps are all re-rated. You've now got Japanese book banks trading at book value, when the European guys are trading at half book value and the European guys have got higher returns on equity than the Japanese guys. But in the mid and the small cap, where the passive flows haven't yet affected, well, that's where the opportunities are. And that's why I'm such a fan of active management. I mean,
yes, and talk to me about the process, because you're talking about the small and mid caps. I also noted from your conversation at BN5 that we're talking extensive universes. I mean, you look at the MSCI World Index 4,400 as a beginning starting point.
Yeah.
How do you take your investment process? Because you also made the commentary that you don't need huge investment teams to send globally, you really can manage this in a small environment. How are you, just look at the small and mid-cap environment in Japan, how do you stretch yourself to examining the opportunity of individual companies in that universe?
Well, I mean, it's a bit like people say, how on earth can you know all the companies in the world? Well, you can't. But it's like saying, how can the South African Springbok rugby coach know all the rugby players in South Africa? They can't. They just need to know that the prop needs to look like lift push this much, and the, you know, the lock needs to be this big. And so they've got their what they want, and then they've got a filtering process with the clubs and the schools and all the rest, and the provincial teams, and then that narrows it down, and then they know those players. And that's what we do. So, you know, if you think about a doctor, okay, it doesn't matter. I've never been to Japan. We've made a lot of money from Japan, so you don't need to have been there. But if you think about a doctor, you know, a doctor can study in South Africa, and my wife's a doctor, so I know this, and they can diagnose people around the world. And that doesn't make that, they don't have to speak. You've got the, you know, the machines. You can see what the SATS rates are and the heart rates and all of that good stuff. And that's what we do. So companies have got income statements, balance sheets, cash flows, wherever they are. But it's easier now because I can go into Google Translate and translate a Japanese annual report.
Where specifically in the small and mid-cap space are you looking in Japan?
So sector, well, I mean, we've got our largest positions actually is a company called Nippon TV, which is a broadcast in Japan, terrestrial broadcast in Japan. And is that an is that exciting?
A media play in this world.
Yeah, but hang on. This is what's interesting, Bronwyn. You see, so that's first level thinking. So we always want to think like, what's the next level? But here's the thing. They've been just accumulating their cash, paying a little bit of dividends. Okay. Now, there's a rule in Japan. It's a bit like the Chinese tech companies, and I'm no doubt we've got that on the agenda too, where you can't have big ownership of, foreign ownership of media companies in Japan. So if it's more than 20%, I think it's 20-25%, you're not on the register. You can't vote. But Nippon TV had an extra clause in their articles where if you couldn't vote, you couldn't get dividends. So foreign shareholders were like, I'm not going to go and own that thing. But dividends were only 2%. It was a 2% yield. And so they'd taken their money and then they just invested in Japanese securities, because remember the bubble burst in Japan in the late 80s, and all these Japanese companies are terrified. And so they've just been hoarding cash, and then, you know, let's go and buy a little bit of Toyota and let's go and buy a little bit of that. And so those investment securities portfolios have grown. And so when we were buying a Nippon TV at 1200 yen, its NAV, which was investment securities and cash, was 3200. Okay. So you're buying 30 cents in the dollar. Now, why is somebody prepared to tell you that for 30 cents a dollar? Because they never think they're going to get hold of the dollar. Okay, that's always, management's always going to just, they're not going to unlock this value. But what you've seen in recent, the last year and a bit in Japan, is there's increasing pressure on the, and I think I mentioned this at the last conference, on companies to unlock value, because it's not in society's interest to have an undervalued stock market, because they're not going to be retiring with the right pensions.
I don't want to move off Nippon TV because this is what I've spent most of my life doing, is running a TV channel. But what you're saying is that it is the structural elements, the securities behind Nippon TV. Correct. It's not about the business model that prevails today. So that's the value unlock you're talking about.
Am I really buying it because I'm really excited about the prospects of Japanese broadcasting? No.
No, then I'd have to sit down and talk to you seriously.
I've got a dollar of value, and I'm currently buying it at 60 cents in the dollar. And if I get that extra 40, which I think we're going to get because they're now buying back shares. So in January, the beginning of Feb, actually, they announced that they're going to buy back 2% of their shares in issue. I mean, the thing went up 25%. And then they've also got a clause, and they want to change that such that foreign shareholders will receive dividends. Now, what's quite exciting about Japan is that in May, their year end for most companies is in March. And then they have what they call these medium term plans. So company will release a medium term plan over the next 3 years. This is what I want ROE to be. This is what I want earnings to be. This is what I want revenue to be, etc. Okay. They never used to include things like ROE, price to book, except they're now putting that in. And so I think what's going to happen is that Nippon TV is going to is going to change this clause, such as foreign shareholders are doing dividends. And if you look at the balance sheet, more of their investment securities has moved into current assets. And I think there's a special divvy on the way. Okay, so that's, but look, we've got 4% in Nippon TV, and it's those kinds of examples.
The share buyback theme, and I should have pushed Pete harder yesterday on it, because sitting on the other side of the spectrum, when I'm in the boardroom, it is one of the tactics to make the investment community feel safe. Well, let's do share buybacks. That's positive. They look at that as skin in the game, et cetera, et cetera. You've just given us the example of an NVIDIA where share buybacks were executed, but more shares an issue at the end of the day and the money all went to staff. So are share buybacks really such a good barometer of, or is it what management is wanting to actually tell you?
It depends on the price. So if you're buying back shares and you're below tangible book value, well, what you're doing is you're adding value to everybody else's shares because you're taking part of that discount and giving it to everybody else. If you're NVIDIA and you're effectively buying back your shares effectively at a 1% yield, let's say, maybe even less, well, that's a rubbish investment. I mean, who wants to go and invest? And they're doing that to offset the dilution. So, you know, I mean, I can't remember the numbers, but I think a year ago, Meta announced, great fanfare, we're going to do a $30 billion buyback. And the share price took off, okay? And going back and look at the charts, we're going to do it. And so I thought, okay, well, this is quite interesting. How much of that $30 billion did they spend buying back shares? Not all of it, okay? I think they spent like just less than half. So, you go, well, there was enough shares, they could have bought it back. So what did they do this year? They announced a $40 billion buyback, but they hadn't even used 20 from the last buyback. So it's just a whole thing.
It's scratch below the surface. Look at that buyback.
But I think it's more of a case of getting the shares to, I'll give you a great example. And we had some shares in Expedia, and they announced a $5 billion buyback, which was 30% of the shares in issue, okay, in a couple of months ago. And the stock price took off because everyone went, look at this. Everyone's, you know, these guys are going to be in the market buying, pushing the share, etc. And we thought, well, this doesn't make sense. If I think something's an amazing buy, why do I want to telegraph it to the world? I want to buy it as much as I can. I don't tell everybody what, you know, I'm not telling you about what shares I'm busy buying now. I'm not buying the Ponte.
I haven't finished.
I don't know. You don't
come in here with a top performing global equity fund and think you're walking out there without sharing some of those.
But the point being, you know, you play your cards close to your chest. So why announce a $5 billion buyback unless you've bought them? Well, what happened a quarter later? The CEO announced that he's leaving. Okay, so how many shares do you think he cashed in? So you got to be careful about, you can't take it at face value. If it's buyback at great prices, well, that's good for remaining shareholders. Buyback at crazy prices is bad. If it's buyback, what is the rationale behind the buyback? So you got to look beyond, you know, look deeper.
We're going to go to audience. Give me a show of hands in terms of questions. Right, so thank you. If we can get a mic. Nobody on this side of the room. Yes, there we go. I sound like an auctioneer.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for that. Just two questions. Yep. First is Tencent on the value side now? And the second thing is your stock screen. What sort of the 3 or 4 or 5 metrics you use?
Oh, you want the secret sauce. Okay, the good news is there's no secret sauce. There's a couple of different sources. On Tencent, yeah, so interestingly, I mean, our weighting in Hong Kong now is bigger than Japan. Okay, so China, we own the Hong Kong stocks. The one thing I would suggest if anybody owns, and so we've got Alibaba and we've got Tencent, Alibaba and Baidu, and then we've got a whole lot of smaller Hong Kong type stocks, where management have got a big stake, they've got nice dividend yields and earnings are growing. But if you think about how much capital is moving to China, I mean, you know, Sai mentioned quite right that there are all these emerging market funds that have been launching emerging markets excluding China. It amazes me. And, you know, go and have a look on BizNews in 2018. I wrote an article against NASPERS and the VIE structures and back in 2018. It was the first piece I wrote. And it was pretty, you know, it was deadly boring. Helped people get to sleep. But now I'm buying China. Why? Because Alibaba was on 31 times forward earnings then. Now it's on 8. And the balance sheet's stronger. They've got more cash in the balance sheet back then. Operating earnings have grown, et cetera. And nobody wants it. And I think the political risk thing is overplayed. So, Bronwyn, you mentioned it yesterday. Okay, let's think about that for a second here. And I wrote about this in last month's fact sheet, where in the US, as who was it this morning who or the other day who mentioned that you've basically got a low level civil war going on in the US, okay? And now we've got an election with two, you know, old people, and if that recession arrives in a deeply divided state where everybody has guns, could get ugly. So I think this whole thing of like, oh well, China's the risky place and everywhere else is, you know, moonshine and roses, that's not true. And I think there's lots of other political risk. And I mean, you know, look.
Well, to put that in, let me give you a stat.
Yeah.
60 countries in the world go to the polls.
Correct.
3 billion people will be voting this year.
Yeah.
Just again.
So what was the second, one of the things we like to look at is return on assets rather than return on equity, because you can manage return on equity by debt. Okay, so you can take away for the return on assets and crank up the debt, and so it looks like it's got an amazing return on equity. I think the things like sustainable growth rate, I think it's pretty meaningless, to be honest. So like, oh, it's got a high return on equity business, and so what they're going to be able to do is reinvest at those at that rate. Well, if you have a look at something like a lot of the consumer brands companies, they buy back shares each year. And what does that do? That reduces the equity, because when you issue shares, it's, you know, debit, bank, credit, equity. When you buy back shares, it's debit, equity, credit, bank. So now you're reducing your equity. So now it increases the return on equity. But if you Pepsi or Coke and you go, well, the idea that you got a 30% ROE and so any profits you'll be able to reinvest at 30%, well, who doesn't know about Coke? You know, the next Starbucks you open, is it going to be as profitable as the last lot? But then if you're using that cash to buy back your own shares 30, 25 times earnings, what you're doing is you're investing that cash at a 4% return, not a 25% return. So anyway, long story. So I come back to return on assets. We like return on assets. And you can do a simple chart, return on assets and price to earnings. How much return on assets, how good is the business? Price to earnings, how much am I paying for that? And try to find the businesses where you think are good businesses and you're not paying too much for them.
Nick?
Sean, I said I'd ask you an easy question. Obviously, you would describe yourself as deep value, the growth investors, and then there's a category of quality investors. How do you define quality, and when are you prepared to pay up for it?
Look, I think quality is often an overused word. Who doesn't anybody? Everybody wants quality. Everybody wants growth. Who doesn't want to live in a quality house, drive a quality car, you know, et cetera, et cetera? Okay. Question is, how much are you paying for it? So you don't have to drive a rust bucket, but you can buy a, let's say you want a BMW Cabriolet, and you say, I've got a choice of when I, are you going to get a good deal if you walk into the showroom on a sunny Saturday morning at the beginning of summer, and you ask the sales guy, well, have you got any specials on BMW Cabriolets? The answer is going to be no. But if you go and into the showroom on a Tuesday night, close to the end of the year, when, you know, there's chance that the sales guy is behind budget in the middle of winter and say, got any deals on Cabriolets? You might find you get a good deal. What's the trick? You got to wait 6 months to summer. Okay. It's like buying a house from a developer or buying a house from a deceased estate. Still buying a house with a good view, et cetera, et cetera. So we want to go for that. So this, but the quality thing, I mean, quality changes. I had a great chat yesterday to a chap who was in the logistics business. And I said to them, you know, interesting, when I started way back when, you had to own UPS and DHL and FedEx. And what was the story? Oh, they got this amazing IP and logistics and the high barriers to entry and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, got a moat around the business. Now you're in the logistics game. You got a cell phone and Waze. You know, you really are. So think about all that. So quality changes. Look at Estee Lauder. You know, everybody thought that was a quality business and the share price being terrible. PayPal. Quality, fintech, et cetera, fallen. So quality can change. I mean, tobacco was a quality business, but now you've got vaping and all the rest. So I think you've got to be very careful if you just say, I'm going to pay up for quality and the fact that things are never going to change. They're going to change. I mean, Nike, who doesn't think Nike's a quality business? Go look at the share price. Not been good.
Deep value. So we came out of a Bitcoin discussion and a crypto discussion. Magnus yesterday just said, just shut it down. Yeah, I mean, he didn't say shut down Bitcoin. Sorry, let me just rephrase that. He meant he wasn't going to answer the question because he doesn't understand it. So how do you as a deep value investor look at Bitcoin?
I don't understand it. I don't have the. If I can go buy decent companies that are growing earnings, that are generating cash, why do I need to go and understand that stuff? I don't.
Well, I got a surprise when I looked at my Zella
one. I don't have to say FOMO.
You don't suffer from FOMO.
They can have their party.
And it's interesting. I mean, this is what happens in an investment thesis: is divergent views make up a market.
Yeah.
And we had very, very bullish enthusiasts, Bitcoin enthusiasts in this chair. Were you in the room?
For part of it.
But it's a no-go area.
No, I don't know if, you know, I'm going to go and read a couple of articles written by people, and that's research. That's for me. It's not research.
100%. I just wanted to get your view as a deep value investor. You mentioned China. I know the mic has gone there. Can I grab the China question, or do you?
Sure. Just as a deep value investor and manager, and I know you've commented on this before at previous business conferences, what's your view on South African equities and the value that they may or may not represent in light of what's going to happen in a few weeks' time with the election?
So just on that deep value thing, I mean, you know, sounds great because, like, wasn't it Deep Blue and Deep Mind and all that sort of stuff? Sounds quite appealing. But we just think that it's like, well, is it attractive? Well, look, what's important at the moment, especially in an inflationary environment, I think this is very important. You want growing businesses, especially growing revenue, because if your costs are going up with inflation and your revenue is shrinking and you've got low margins, it doesn't take much for you to swing to a loss. So growing businesses, you want growing business. We want growing businesses. You know, Carrefour, I told you there, it's growing business. Growing profits, but I'm not paying crazy prices for that. So we all want growing businesses. We don't own any South African equities at the moment. And I guess we'll, you know, they don't come through our screen. The fish don't swim into our pond. Now, maybe I need to go and have another look and go, well, hang on, we've got the right lure on the hook. But then I look at the banks and I go, well, they just under book. And I got ABN AMRO on half book. I got Barclays similarly. And I'm getting an 8% dividend in euros. And now, of course, the South African banks will have a higher ROE than the European banks. But then I go, well, maybe the risk in, you know, the South African property market is different to the risk in the Dutch residential property market. So,
are you saying you are considering changing the lure?
No,
are you not going to look into the South African?
Oh, I'll go and have a look. I'll go, why isn't ShopRite? Why isn't Mr. Price? I mean, I'm trying to think who you mentioned. Was it might be Sai mentioned Mr. Price? Well, why hasn't Mr. Price come through our screen? I'll go and have occasion. I mean, there are a couple of investors that I rate highly, and I will have a look and see what they've got and go, well, how come am I missing something? Has something slipped past the net? But ShopRite's 22 times earnings, Carrefour's 8. Okay, so we will evaluate that. I've got Alibaba and Baidu. I don't have to have Tencent. And actually, I think Sai is absolutely right in terms of those VIE structures. Back then, we didn't know whether we could trust them. But now they're getting dividends and the guys are using cash. They're using cash to buy back shares. So they've proven themselves that they're actually fine. And I totally agree with Sai that the regulatory environment's changed. You know, remember and I think this is an important point. The last time Chinese government was tough on the tech companies was before the property bubble burst. Okay. They didn't need the tech companies as much for employment as they do today. So those guys are big employers. You know, you think about food delivery, all those guys e-commerce delivery. They're big employers. And the last thing you want to do is go and stifle that source of employment when construction employment is low.
So with Baidu and Alibaba, the thesis then for China, in your mind, stands strong despite the regulatory risk that we've spoken about.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if that relationship deteriorates, Apple sell 20% of their phones in China and they're mostly made in China. You know, NVIDIA sells 15% of their revenues in China. The one that won't be affected was Alphabet. So if that risk plays out, trust me, you don't want to own US tech. And that's why, and this is an important point, we don't own the US ADRs. We don't own Baba, and we don't own Baidu. We own 9888HK, 9988HK. We own the Hong Kong listed ones because I don't want to risk the US ones getting suspended.
If you look to the election, we spoke about the political risk, US.
Okay, yeah.
again, the thesis is pretty much that we're going to see, well, let me not say that. By some accounts, Trump is going to come in. He's going to be pro-business.
Well, I don't know if he's not China-friendly. So that is that going to be pro-business?
Will it change your thesis on the U.S. in terms of the outcome?
I'll be disappointed in the country that she's Trump, but anyway.
We know this, but how are you playing the U.S. at the moment?
I don't play that kind of thing. So I go, well, what, you know, are the companies priced? Is it going to change my food retailers? We got Kroger in the U.S. No, people are going to have to eat. And you know, the other thing that's a big thing, a big risk of the U.S. retailers right now is shoplifting. I mean, it's off the scale. Okay, there's not a retailer that doesn't mention, they call it shrink. Sounds better than shoplifting or theft. But with Kroger, with the feed retailers, you know, you don't see people rushing out with cauliflowers under their arms. They rush off with. So it's a little bit less susceptible to that.
I just want to see anything. Okay.
Just speak into it like this.
Sure. Okay, Xine.
Sure.
Ask the question in Afrikaans, yeah.
Yeah, it's yes. I have to focus in English, eh? But gold, what's your view on gold?
Yeah, we don't own gold. You know, yeah, it's just, I think, an easier way is to play money, make money.
Sorry, gold companies.
Yeah, we don't own any gold companies.
Very quick, like the Bitcoin question.
What are passives? He's going to ask me about passives.
Yeah, what are passives, Sean?
I think the passive thing has peaked, and I think passives today are very dangerous because... I mean, there was that question. You said, "What's?"
You are talking to your book.
No, I'm talking to my book, and I've spoken about this. But I think people need to be very aware about the concentration risk. And there was a question as to what is going to make it stop. Well, we don't know. We never know in advance. Okay, but something will break. Something will break. It could be you wake up tomorrow and Berkshire Hathaway has sold half the Apple. It could be.
But aren't passives, I mean, the underpin to a passive is the diversification that you get by virtue of investing in an index.
Yeah, but most people are invested in US, and most US investors are invested in tech, and so there's huge concentration risk there. And it's gone from, in not a long space time, I mean, you know, 2 months ago we were talking about Magnificent Seven. We're now talking about the sort of Fantastic Four. Okay.
And the granolas, don't forget.
Yeah, and I haven't actually looked that up. I wanted to look. That was a good one. That was a new one. I didn't know that. But I mean, Tesla's fallen by the wayside. Apple's fallen by the wayside. You know, so it wasn't long ago and people thought those things were unassailable. So, you know, so if something will break and it could be, I don't know what it could be. It could be, you know, people suddenly realizing that actually the executives are all selling NVIDIA. Jeff Bezos has sold $10 billion worth of Amazon in the last few weeks. Meanwhile, the Chinese Jack Ma put a hand in his pocket and spent $200 million buying his stock. Now, where do you want to be? You want to be on the side of Jeff Bezos, you know, on the wrong side of Jeff Bezos. If he's selling $10 billion worth of stock and you want to buy a passive and Amazon's a big stake in that, really?
You know, you've just given me the headline that I need. As a journalist, I'm always looking for the headline. See, you got into trouble on... The fee structure side of not trouble. You put it out there. I think that was at BizNews 4. Do you know the headline now?
No.
Sean Pesh says, passive investing about to implode.
Yeah, I think people are going to get hurt. The question is not whether Amazon or Microsoft is a great business or Google's a great business. The question is, can I make money from here?
No, I love it. This is a very juicy headline.
Hello, Sean. Sean, how's it? What percentage of your overall investment portfolio would you be holding in cash at the moment, considering the run on the markets? And secondly, what do you think is the optimum number of stocks you should have, as opposed to concentrating your risk? As I'm of the view that if you spread your risk, it's more risky than concentrating your stocks. So is like Fundsmith, for example, with their 20 or so in that portfolio, do you think 20, 10, or what's the ratio?
So here's another headline for you, Bronwyn. So my view is leave conviction to the courts. Okay. Stuff comes out of nowhere. We've all seen that. Things come out of nowhere. Look at Steinhoff we were talking about this morning. And I think it's interesting if you looked at the beginning, if you looked at all the forecasts at the beginning, what were the biggest events of the last couple of years? Ukraine war, no forecaster was talking about that. And before that, the pandemic, no forecaster was talking about that at the beginning of the year. So stuff comes out of nowhere. And so I think diversification is great. And so we have about 50 stocks in the portfolio. I've got to be able to sleep at night. I want to do this for, you know, another 50 years. Hopefully it's Warren Buffett type thing. So I want to be able to sleep at night, and I'm not going to do that if I've got a huge position that I'm stressing about, and every move, you know, I feel, you know, I go from euphoria to despair based on whether the share price is up or down. So nicely spread portfolio, and we'll get rich slowly. That's fine. You know, it's a bit like playing cricket. I use that example, or, you know, don't play IPL cricket. I'm not going out there trying to hit a six off every ball, because you will get bowled. And so you want to play the long game, test match cricket.
Before you go, where's my headline?
Leave conviction to the courts.
Leave conviction to the courts. It doesn't work as well.
How much cash is about to blow up?
Cash do you hold back?
So we don't have any cash right now. There's so many ideas. I've got no shortage of ideas. I mean, I've got companies on 8x earnings. What do I want to have cash for?
Because there's a Ukraine war, and then you can buy stocks that manufacture arms.
But I mean, you know, we started in 2008, October 2008. And so since then, we've had the global financial crisis, European financial crisis, Fukushima, pandemic, negative oil prices, Ukraine war, and our 100 Rand has gone to 1,000 Rand. So, you know, every crisis brings an opportunity. And so we'll just find whenever there's a crisis, we'll just go, well, what's the opportunity? Ukraine war, there was opportunity in European stocks. And so we'll take advantage of those.
What do they say? Make the best of a crisis. What was the term?
There's a famous billionaire in the US called Richard Rainwater. He's no longer with us. But he used to say most people buy and then they're like meerkats. We didn't use the meerkats. But they're on the lookout for what's the crisis. Okay, and then respond. He says, I wait till the crisis and then I buy.
And Buffett says, sell when others are buying and buy when others are selling. I know I've got it slightly incorrect.
Yeah, so I love that one because it's like be greedy when others are fearful.
Oh, that's it.
Okay, and fearful when others are greedy. Now, every time the market falls, every journalist out there rushes out with that, you know, be greedy when others are fearful. But right now, people are greedy with NVIDIA and all the rest. And no journalist is out there going, be fearful. Come, Warren Buffett told us to be fearful at this time. So they only tell us about, they only roll out that quote when the market's
just
down. They don't roll it out
into
the
this journalist camp. It sounds as though you're hurting me into the journalist camp. I'm joking. All right. Let's take that question at the back. It's the final question. And then I've got one more.
How's it, Sean? I just wanted to go on to AR. So I understand the argument that it's going to have a big impact on other industries. That's for sure. But if everyone has access to the technology, surely there won't be much of a return for investors. It will just be a race to the bottom. So how do you select things that are actually going to benefit investors through AR?
Well, that's why active management has a role. So if you look at, you know, there are weak competitors and strong competitors. And if you look at just the French retail market, food retail market, one of the weak competitors right now is casino because they've got too much debt. They can't invest in the capex that is necessary to take advantage of these kinds of things. You know, there are weak banks who are stressing about commercial real estate. Well, they're not going to have that money to spend on tech. So, you know, that's why active management, I think, makes so much sense because we are able to go and differentiate those and say, right, well, we don't own US banks and we want to own European banks. And so you've got to find the opportunities because you're right, it will. And what we don't know is how much they will reinvest some of that profit margin back into price and weaken the competitors further.
So I said that you can't sit on the stage, be in the top 1% of performance when it comes to your global equity fund without giving me a couple of stocks.
I'm giving you a couple?
No, I want some more. No. I understand you want to play your cards close to your chest. But you're going to give me three more before you walk off the stage, and then we're done.
That's a disservice to our clients. I'm buying them. That's my other, you know, three more.
In your global equity fund. I can get the fund fact sheet, can't I?
Yeah, you'll only get the top 10. And you don't know whether I'm buying those recently or they got into the top 10.
So I'm getting that. You know,
okay, well, I'll tell you. Okay, let me give you another one, which also touches on the AI, which we own. I'm not buying right now, but it's, you know, is eBay. And what's interesting about eBay is if you look at that, you know, I don't know if you last went onto eBay, but a lot of those things are cluttered. It's a cluttered portfolio. You know, you go on there and you want to buy a model train, let's say. Like, you know, you've got like so many pictures and then you've got this model train. And said, we're not photographers, so there's a cluttered background. They can use a, they know that the crisper the image, the more the what item goes for, is sold for. Okay. So you can use AI to declutter the background and to enhance the image. And then you can use, you want to sell, let's say I've got a model train I want to sell. They can mine that information and say, well, the last person who sold that model train, who got the highest price, advertised it like this. Do you want AI to write your description? Sure, write my description. Okay. So you can see this is a business, but I mean, this thing's on 10% free cash flow yield, strong balance sheet, buying back stock, and can benefit from AI. I'm not paying crazy prices.
And you know, I'm going to let you off the hook because Cy Jacobs is in the room. I know I could have pushed you harder for beyond your top 10, but I'm satisfied with the eBay. Sean Pesch, thank you very much for joining us.